Please be seated. The bit which I don't think Vaughan mentioned in his introduction was that at one time I was organist of the church where he was vicar. And as that is a famously difficult leadership relationship, it's very courageous of him, I think, to ask me to come here and talk tonight. I wouldn't obviously say so in front of him, but in fact he was brilliant. When the Archbishop of Canterbury was on Desert Island Discs just before Christmas, the luxury he wanted to take with him was the complete boxed set of The West Wing. For those of you who've recently arrived from Mars or are under 20 years old, The West Wing was a beautifully made US TV series about a sincere, committed, and clever president of the United States. He was working hard to offer excellent leadership to his country and the world while surrounded by a brilliant group of staff who were flawed enough to be entertaining. Their hearts are in the right places, but their minds and their bodies were quite often in the wrong places. Their tendency to mess things up doesn't prevent them from coming back to try again to get things right. In all of this, they were doing their best to carry through their president's vision through loyalty. The Archbishop is not alone in his admiration of the West Wing. Apparently, it was the favourite late-night viewing for Tony Blair and his staff in Downing Street. And it's a common choice for leaders of many fields when talking about their influences. It's sometimes shown on leadership courses to spark discussion about good leadership. What could be a better model of leadership than the urbane, witty, charismatic, and fundamentally decent polymath that is President Bartlett? While The West Wing is great television, the very idea of an all-round good leader such as President Bartlett is misleading. The notion that someone's characteristics can make them a great leader has no theoretical or research support, in addition to which it also leads pretty directly to idolatry. It's not how we should talk about leadership. Leadership is not about being Superman or Superwoman. No one is good at as many things as President Bartlett. And if the people who you lead tell you that you are, then they're lying to you. The difficulty we have in talking about leadership, I suggest, is that the concept is too popular. If in doubt about why things are going wrong, just call it a leadership problem. Leadership is important, but no one is sure exactly what it is or how it can be made better. So next time we're travelling, we go to the airport bookstall and we buy a book about leadership. It's clear from the cover that the author is an accomplished leader who has at last found the secret ingredient that will make all our leadership come good. So we buy it and we read the first three or four pages, by which time it's beginning to sound a little bit difficult, a little bit iffy, and a little bit less convincing. We then put the book on our shelf. And a few weeks later, when we're travelling again, we buy another one. In this respect, leadership books are just like diet books. They keep selling because one day we expect to find the key to leadership and then all will be well. It's frighteningly easy to become a leadership expert. There's such a demand for it that if you come up with a new phrase for an old idea and then write a book with lots of highly spun examples, which tells everyone that this is the secret ingredient that you've got, then you've probably got a career there. Before we get further into talking about leadership, I want to clear up a couple of confusions which I think are part of the problem we have in talking about it. The first of these is between a noun and a verb, a role and an activity. We sometimes refer to senior people in organisations as the leadership team, and it's sometimes assumed that leadership is done by people at the top. Actually, the route to the top in many organisations, private as well as public, is never to be caught doing anything wrong. And you can only do that if you avoid all the risks inherent in leadership. People who wear the leadership t-shirt are not necessarily engaged in the act of leading. The other confusion is between stories and how we tell them. By leading, I suggest we mean doing something to take the story forward. This could be the story of our organisation, our church, our group, even ourselves. It's something to do with taking a story forward. It doesn't matter how much people strut about telling us that they're extremely important, if they're not taking the story forward, they're not leading. If we want to think about leadership working, we need to call times to our mind when we've seen people taking a story forward to good effect, times when things are being made better, when something was happening which couldn't have been brought about without leadership. Now the problem here, I haven't got to the second confusion yet in case you're wondering, the problem here is that human beings tell stories in a particular way. Whether we're talking about someone turning around the fortunes of a school, a company in recovery, or the response to the Ebola epidemic, we tend to talk about the activities of a few heroic figures. We tell stories habitually with a hero, a few villains, and quite possibly a fool. In my work, I've had the opportunity to talk to a number of those people about whom heroic leadership stories get told. Most of the effective ones share a quality of humility, and they want to tell you about the other people who were involved, who were essential to what happened, but who you never read about in the papers. These are the people who did the bits that the visible leader was bad at, or who were needed because the leadership task was simply too big for one person to carry out on their own. The more we look at the activity of leadership in close-up, the less individual it looks. Most activities of any significance are put together by a number of different people exercising different skills. For example, let's go to the present. Here we are at Choral Evensong, a service put together with a number of different skills exercised by people with different qualities. Who's leading? Is the service led by the clergy? Is the service led by the musicians? Is the service led by the readers? By the people giving out the books? Is it led by the people who designed and created the building? Is it led by the people who designed and created the liturgy? On a good day, the answer is that parts of it are led by different people working together to bring about something special, each feeling released to step forward to lead at some points, and equally importantly, and more difficult to do quite often, stepping back to enable others to lead at other points. This is how leadership works at its best. Many people are involved in it, stepping up to lead at some points and stepping back to enable others to lead at other points. Sometimes this is because of different technical skills, as in Choral Evensong, and I think I shouldn't let that point go past without saying what a fabulous privilege it's been to enjoy the musical skills of the musicians here tonight. Sometimes it's because of different technical skills. Sometimes it's because people have different qualities and need to contribute different kinds of things to leadership. One authority suggests that there are four main arts to leading. First, there is a philosophical art, by which he means telling the story of the organisation and giving it an identity. When I used to recruit professorial staff to Cass Business School, what story did I tell them about our school? Where we'd come from, where we were going, what sort of school were we? That story was crucial to getting the people I wanted because they had to distinguish who we were as compared with, for example, Warwick or London Business School. Which one would they choose to go and work at? Similarly, what kind of church is St. Mary's? What is its story and where's that story going next? What is its identity that differentiates it from other churches around here? Or indeed any other church. What is its story? Where's the story going next? That's the first of those leadership arts. Second, there's a fine art. This is where visionary leadership comes in. Having decided on your identity, can you paint a picture of the future that you can work towards? Where might you like to see your organisation, group, or indeed yourself go at some point in the future? What might the churches in Warwick try to achieve over the next 2 years? He calls it a fine art because this is, as I say, painting a picture. It's a visionary thing. Third, and this is the one which is often ignored, I think, there's a martial art. Does everything work? Are the right meetings being held, being chaired well and minuted properly? Do decisions get acted upon, and are those actions properly resourced? Is the photocopier working? If not, It doesn't matter how well the martial, the philosophical art or the visionary art has been done. If the photocopier isn't working, you're lost. Nothing is going to happen. You might as well not do any leading because it's ineffective. And also, the frustration will be unbounded because there's all these people beginning to get the philosophical story and the visionary story, and then nothing happens, and that's excruciating. We must all, in our time, have seen churches and other organisations that are being wrecked for the lack of a bit of decent martial arts leadership. Is the story being destroyed because it's mired in chaos? Sometimes people call that art management rather than leadership. I don't care, really. It doesn't actually seem to me to make any difference as to which of those we call it. This is another part of what has to happen if leadership is to occur. Then there is the charismatic art of leadership, the art of getting people excited and ready to act, the art of engaging the emotions and building enthusiasm. This is what people tend to think of first when they talk about leadership. This is about having a great, engaging storyteller. Now, that is very important, but the best leader I've worked for in my university career was actually very weak on charisma. He really couldn't do it. He was not good on his feet. But the good news was that he knew that. And he knew that he was surrounded by other people who loved strutting around being charismatic, while he focused on building the organization's identity, which he was particularly good at. So by recognizing what he was and was not good at, it ceased to be a problem. He had more, people who could do the charisma coming out of his ears, and he let them go and do that. So that's four arts, and we could add more to those. I'm sure we could all add other arts which we don't think are included in that. None of those activities, or none of those arts, can achieve leadership on their own. But think about situations where you've seen leadership working well, where you've seen a story of a church or another organisation going forward, and think about what was going on there, and I suggest you'll probably see those four arts being combined. Now notice that it's very unlikely that anybody is going to be good at all four. So it's almost certain that leadership's going to work best where you've got different people exercising those arts and contributing their own speciality within them, offering the kind of leadership at which they're best. If we had had two readings in tonight's service, then the other one I would have chosen would have been, or would have asked for, would have been 1 Corinthians 12, verse 14. We only had one, so I'm going to read this anyhow. Indeed, the body does not consist of one member, but of many. If the foot were to say, because I'm not a hand, I don't belong to the body, that would not make it any less a part of the body. And if the ear were to say, because I'm not an eye, I don't belong to the body, that would not make it any less a part of the body. If the whole body were an eye, where would the hearing be? If the whole body were hearing, where would the sense of smell be? But as it is, God arranged the members of the body, the members in the body, each one of them, as he chose. If all were a single member, where would the body be? As it is, there are many members, yet one body. The eye cannot say to the hand, I have no need of you, nor again the head to the feet, I have no need of you. On the contrary, the members of the body that seem to be weaker are indispensable. And those members of the body that we think less honourable, we clothe with greater honour, and our less respectable members are treated with greater respect, whereas our more respectable members do not need this. But God has so arranged the body, giving the greater honour to the inferior member, that there may be no dissension within the body, but the members may have the same care for one another. If one member suffers, all suffer together with it. If one member is honoured, all rejoice together with it. I think this is a picture of exactly how effective leadership works anywhere, and it gives us much of the answer to how we should talk about particularly Christian leadership, but any kind of leadership it's also true for. We can only carry forward the story of our organisations, our churches, etc., by having several people with different gifts work together to carry these stories forward. Finally, I think we shouldn't talk about leadership without looking at its uglier side, it has the power to go horribly wrong. Most obviously, this happens with leaders who use their charismatic power to tell a story that fills people with hatred and violence. Uncontroversial examples would be Hitler, Mussolini, Stalin, Ceausescu, Chen Mao. We could all come up with examples closer to home, but that might just get us into furious arguments about which of our national leaders are the most toxic, so we won't go there. But bad leadership is not only leader-driven, it can also be follower-driven. Leaders can become accustomed to others going along with what they want. And indeed, there can be a temptation to ratchet up your demands as a leader, becoming more and more outrageous as a kind of virtuoso display of what they can get away with, while caring less and less about their followers as human beings with stories of their own. That way, the leaders can stop listening to the people who follow them. Also, for people in leadership roles, their view of their own expertise can become inflated. You may be a very good doctor or dentist, but you don't have equal authority when you talk about religion or politics. It's easy to feel your own qualities leaking and feeling you're an expert in things which you're not. I speak as one who briefly became the professor of snow, an expert on the effect of snow on the workplace a few years back. I had never thought about it before. I knew nothing particularly about it, but there was a very heavy snowfall one year. Many of the roads around London were blocked. I was accessible to studios in West London by car, and I was well practiced in how to sound like an expert. By the time of my first television interview on the topic, even I believed in my own authority to talk about snow and productivity. Leaders can get caught up in their own propaganda. But equally, followers may be toxically dependent on their leaders. We push people forward to take responsibility for developing the story of our organisation, or even our own stories, because it's more comfortable than taking responsibility for ourselves. This is the topic of the reading that we heard earlier from 1 Samuel. Samuel was getting old, and his sons were not up to the job of being judges and prophets. The elders of Israel were getting frightened. What would happen if there were no one in authority over them? They didn't want to take that responsibility, and they wanted to be like other nations, so they asked for a king. Samuel felt rejected, and from the passage, I think so did God. Samuel warned them that a king would exploit them, take their children as his servants, take their fields and their crops, and rob them blind. But the people still wanted a king. Every time you hear someone calling for strong leadership, I suggest just think of this passage. One of the most frequent surprises to me in researching leadership has been how many apparently strong, effective leaders feel exploited by their followers. Of course, some people who are leading love power. But in many cases, they talk about the constraints on their action, about the limitations of their information, and then about how many of their followers see them as having limitless power and demand they use it. These leaders are aware of the pressure to appear to be more decisive, stronger, more optimistic, more competitive, and sometimes more brutal than they would choose. They know that such strong leadership can be disabling to other people and destructive to the people working for them, and it doesn't enable them to make as good a contribution to the organization's story as they should. So sometimes when we are pushing someone forward in leadership, we should ask ourselves what we're doing to them. So, in summary, how should we talk about leadership? One, if we think we're in charge, we're fooling ourselves. This, I think, is obviously true for Christians, but the whole of complexity theory would argue that it's true for everyone. Whatever we're leading, we make a contribution. We are never in charge, we are never in control. The world is more complicated than us. And anyone who appears to be in charge is probably terrified, because even if you don't know they're not in control, they know it. Secondly, no one can do it on their own. No one has all the qualities to do leading. No one has all the gifts. They do it best with people around them by releasing other leaders. Third, we can think of it as developing the story for whatever organisation or group we're leading. That is what I'm suggesting leadership is all about, is developing or once again releasing the story. And fourth, if we know how to do leadership, then it isn't leadership. Leadership is always an improvisation. It's always about doing something that neither we nor anybody else quite knows how to do. It's always a reaching. We never arrive in leadership. Thank you.